This is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Tuesday, March 2nd, 2021. Producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk while playing Hurt. I'm Buster, only working from my home studio just north of New York City. And Taylor, how the wisdom teeth recovery? How's that going?
It's going much better. I definitely feel better today. It's still sore. Brushing 4 open wounds is quite painful, but we're on the mend. I'm thinking by this Friday, I'll be in a better state. I'll probably eat some solid food today. And Friday, I'm looking forward to that because I'll crack a beer on Friday, and that'll be good.
I was gonna say you sound like my kids, where it's like on Friday, oh, I'm good to go.
Yes,
weekend's here, I'm ready to go. That's gonna be
sick.
You this weekend.
Me? No,
exactly. It was a good day for Gary Sanchez on Monday. This is him in the Yankee game.
Sanchez, Gregory Soto, the new Tiger pitcher. That one's driven deep to center field. Hill back on the track, looking up over the batter's eye. Oh, what a shot for Gary Sanchez.
That was Michael Kay on the Yes Network with that call. But, of course, the big question about Gary Sanchez is mostly about his defense and his communication with Gerrit Cole. Gerrit Cole threw yesterday to Gary, and he talked about the communication with his catchers.
Whether it's Kyle, whether it's Gary, whether it's Robinson, every pitcher's job is to, try to foster good communication and continue to make a positive impact on those relationships. So, whoever's back there during spring, whoever's back there during the bullpen, your job that day is to try to get your teammate better. And so that's what we'll do.
Shohei Ohtani had a good day on Monday.
Flashed the form he did in his rookie year. Here he grounds one fair on the right side. Just out of the reach of Garcia, and Ohtani's first time up this spring gets a one-out single. Angels have a base runner. Shohei Ohtani, who's had a hit in today's ball game, Japan or his rookie season in the big leagues. Next delivery, slices that one into left field, and that's a base hit.
Terry Smith on the Angels television network with that call. Ohtani with a couple of hits. We've heard that the Angels, they're going to continue to try to make this work with Ohtani being a two-way player. The Francisco Lindor contract extension talks could begin soon. That's according to Sandy Alderson, who, of course, oversees baseball operations for the Mets. I took this off Tony DiComo's Twitter feed yesterday. Here's Francisco.
Ken, to be honest, I've been enjoying my days here. And I probably, like he said, they might start soon. I don't know. I don't control it. But they had to get to know me, and I had to get to know the organization, and I had to get to know them. So that's why I earlier mentioned it was a little too early to start, because I didn't know anybody. I didn't know the organization. I don't know what their plans are, and they didn't know me. They can say great things about me, and then I show up to camp and be the worst person ever. Or vice versa, I could be the worst person ever, come into camp and be the greatest. They had to get to know me.
Yeah, I don't think they're worried about Francisco Lindor becoming the worst person ever. We're going to be talking with Sarah Langs coming up in a bit about what a Lindor extension might look like in terms of how many years and how many dollars. Trevor Bauer took the mound in the Dodgers uniform for the first time, and he had a good day.
As he gets ready to deliver the 0-2 to Hilliard, the left-handed batter. Curveball, he looked at it for strike three. Dropped in the deuce nicely. And Bauer's got his first strikeout in a Dodger uniform.
Pretty good command right there. 21 pitches into your first spring outing to be able to do that. You got an 0-2 count, so you're really at your advantage.
Yeah, it was Tim Nevert. And, of course, Ned Colletti, the former Dodger general manager, talking about Trevor Bauer. I'm going to ask Jessica Mendoza coming up about Trevor Bauer and about whether or not he needs to make any adjustments when it comes to his use of social media. We'll also be talking with Manny Bell, who covers the Indians for MLB.com as we begin our American League Central previews. Before we get to Jess, Sarah, and Mandy, two things I want to mention. First, check out Stephen A's World, streaming weekdays on ESPN+. You can also find the best interviews from Stephen A's World available as a podcast every Wednesday. Listen wherever you get your podcast and watch Stephen A's World on ESPN+. And check out Around the Rim Presents, I'm Speaking, hosted by LaChyna Robinson, an interview series focused on Black women across sports, entertainment, and culture who are refusing to be silent and demanding real change. Episode 1 features a conversation between Robinson, Netflix chief marketing officer, Bozema St. John, and WNBA player and activist Natasha Cloud. That's Around the Rim presents I'm Speaking. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Buster. Just go to Indeed.com/Buster right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Buster. Terms and conditions apply.
Jessica Mendoza is an analyst for ESPN, and Jess, your first exhibition broadcast this week. Pretty exciting, huh?
Oh my gosh, baseball. And it's crazy. I was just answering this question yesterday if like I actually believed, you know, that spring training would start on time, that the season would start on time, even just a month ago, 2 months ago. And the answer was no. Like, you know, we had this spring training schedule, the games that were going to be on this first week of March. And, you know, I put it in my calendar kind of like, this is probably going to move a little bit, like having just an idea that, this probably would not be happening this week. And it is. So just feels good. It's starting to feel a little bit more normal, definitely than last year, but more likely that I think even than I thought a few weeks ago.
The broadcasts start at 1 p.m. Eastern Tuesday afternoon. Rays versus the Red Sox. Wander Franco will be in the lineup for the Tampa Bay Rays, which is pretty exciting. I don't know exactly who's going to be mic'd up, but you know, based on what we did last year and how much fun everybody had with it, there'll probably be players mic'd up this week. The game you're doing, one game you're doing this week, Mariners and Cubs. And the notes you sent me, I was very intrigued by what you mentioned about Javier Baez, because you clearly have done a lot of reporting on his really ugly 2020 season.
Yeah, I mean, it was interesting. I remember talking about it a little bit last year just because it caught my eye with how outspoken and few player. It wasn't just Javier Baez, but he was definitely one of the most outspoken on the lack of in-game video. And that's something that, you know, has really started to come about with the iPads that you can see. And basically what that is, Buster, is, you know, Javier being able to, after an at-bat, go right into the dugout, look at what the pitch was, where the location was, maybe, you know, the call. And, you know, after obviously everything that had happened last year in 2020, they eliminated that. It will be back for this year, but Baez said that was a huge reason. And he was, I mean, it sounds like, oh gosh, he's just making an excuse, but he was saying, look, I got to be better in a variety of different ways. But it was clear, Buster, there are a lot of players that relied on that. And for Baez, it's something maybe even sometimes routine. You know, as a player, I know that when you take something away that maybe kind of helped your confidence, knowing like, okay, I can see this, I can go back, and then your next at bat, you maybe tell yourself, this is why I'm going to be successful, because I was able to do my homework, research between at bats, and now have the information to come back my next at bat and have success. So when that was taken away for, you know, a player like Javier Baez, it clearly affected him.
It's interesting, Jess, because I think that a lot of players, just, you know, having sat in on some of these Zoom calls, a lot of players are doing personal assessments about what happened last year to them, about performance. You know, we played last week the sound for Mike Trout talking about how he didn't do his usual game preparation, you know, practicing his routes during batting practice, and he totally owned that. I've heard that Christian Yelich, who struggled so badly last year, was someone who in previous years really benefited from routine. Oscar Mercado, I was listening to him of the Cleveland Indians, and he talked about being negative. Like, it was easy to feel sorry for yourself and this stinks and health and safety protocol. And then he went home, and I think he was talking with his brother, and they were like, you know what, I didn't handle that positively. It seemed like a lot of players are doing that now.
Absolutely. I mean, it's like something we've never seen. And I mean, think for all of us, it was such just a weird, funky year across the board, of course. But when you really dive into small things, you know, like that in-game video, just even, you know, preparation routine and at bats, you know, Javier Baez talked about how he's had slower starts in the past, but then the back half of the seasons when he really shines. I mean, think of Buster off the top of your head, how many players, you know, have struggled early on. And when you get the full 162 games, shoot, even 100 games, how much you can improve. And you've relied on that in the past to be able to get yourselves going. And then of course, fans. And for someone like Baez in particular, yeah. I mean, he is a fan favorite. He is someone that has always played off the fans, enjoyed that. I mean, he's a showman in many ways in the way that his game is, not purposely, but definitely a part of his game is that, like, fans just love the way he plays, and he truly feeds off of that.
You know, it's interesting hearing your information and seeing what we saw last year from Baez after seeing what we saw the year before. There are periods of time when he absolutely dominates, and there are periods of time where he looks completely lost to the degree, Jess, that I think if I'm sitting in the Cubs' shoes, even if I'm sitting in Baez's shoes, I don't know if I want to talk about an extension this spring. Because if you're Baez, you probably, you know, don't want to be evaluated, have the freshest evaluation based off of what happened last year. And if you're the Cubs, I don't know if I want to give that player a ton of money that I saw last year. What's your read on that?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it's definitely more in the Cubs' favor. I feel like they would have the upper hand in saying, hey, look at your numbers right from this last season, and being able to approach him with definitely something more favorable for them. So I thought, it's funny, Buster, I thought the same exact thing with, you know, just for pretty much all the free agents that are going to be in the market this year. I mean, it's insane. You know, Lindor and Seager and Correa. And obviously Javier Baez, it's Trevor Story. I mean, the free agent market after the season is going to be just filled with all of these shortstops. And so I'm like, gosh, if the Cubs could approach him right now when he is probably the most vulnerable, feeling like, oh my gosh, after the season, how much I struggled offensively. Yes, let's just get comfortable, sign an extension. This would be the best time to get Javier Baez long-term. Now, if he agrees, I think he's going to have a remarkable year this year, just hearing, you know, him talk the last couple of weeks. But this is definitely something that would be more advantageous to the Cubs if they could get him to extension right now.
It's going to be a fascinating year for the Cubs, because when you look at where they sit, you know, they made some moves late in the wintertime, but boy, they could pivot one way or the other very aggressively. In other words, in the National League Central, very few teams did actually anything other than the Cardinals adding Nolan Arenado. So the division is conceivably within the Cubs' grasp, even after trading Yu Darvish. But on the other hand, if the Cardinals do seize control of the division, I don't know if you agree with me. I think there should be an investigation if the Cardinals don't win the division.
Yes.
But if the Cardinals, you know, wind up taking control of the division, I think it makes it easier for the Cubs on, say, June 30th to say, you know what, we're open for business. We're ready to talk about Chris Bryant. We're ready to talk about Anthony Rizzo. We're ready to talk potentially about Javier Baez. We're ready to talk about Jock Peterson, who they just signed. They've got so many guys who are under control for one more year, which I think is going to make it easier to sell in midseason. What do you see ahead for the Cubs?
I mean, they definitely would have, I feel like, to do that while playoffs are still in sight, because even if the Cardinals win the division, I feel like at least on paper right now, because of how great this team is defensively, and always, I mean, gosh, the last 4 years, it's been the potential of what they can do offensively. You know, if they're still in the hunt, I still would be shocked. But given the fact that if they are, you know, looking like, hey, this is a team that's probably, if they do make the playoffs, they're squeaking in, and it's their pitching staff that I'm most concerned with when I think about, okay, even if they do make the playoffs, how far of a run can they go? Just because of who they've lost. I mean, even Tyler Chatwood, you mentioned, you know, Yu Darvish, you know, John Lester, Jose Quintana. I mean, yes, all of these individually besides Yu Darvish aren't like, wow, that's a huge, but you put those four collectively together and you look at their starting rotation and what it looks like, this is going to be the softest throwing pitching staff in all of Major League Baseball. They were that last year with Darvish. So, I mean, you get guys like Zach Davies that averages, you know, 88 miles an hour. I do think that they can still win games because of that defense. I mean, this is going to be a contact-based team. But Buster, you've seen the numbers, the analytics. It shows now. I mean, it's all or nothing type pitching and hitting. You need guys on your staff that are going to get the swing and miss because hitters are going to run into one, and that's how they score runs. So to your point, I'm interested to see how this pitching staff can hold this team up long enough so that they can make that playoff run. Otherwise, they've got some of the biggest names that they can trade off and help build this team back up from so many trade prospects.
Yeah, Jed Hoyer, who heads up baseball ops, is not going to go out publicly and say, yeah, we might wind up being sellers. But when you look at the landscape of the National League, if you're the Cubs front office, you're not measuring the Cubs merely against the St. Louis Cardinals. You're saying, man, you got a super team in the Dodgers. You have a super team potentially in the Padres. You have the best division of baseball in the National League East. If, in fact, it's a 10-team playoff field, you're probably only getting one team out of the Central. And that's why I do think if they're not playing great midseason, that they will pivot very quickly and, you know, Zach Davies, another guy who's under team control for just 2021. So we'll see where they go. You've been working on a feature. You told me about this, I want to say, about a month ago, that I'm excited about, Trevor Bauer's agent, Rachel Luba. What did you learn?
So much. I mean, first of all, I'm excited for this feature just because there's millennials. I mean, the age now. I mean, it was crazy, Buster, just being down there in Arizona. And, you know, everywhere we went, you know, both Rachel and Trevor have these, you know, what looks like a professional photo, like a camera, but it's on the edge of a selfie stick, and they vlog. So video blog everything. So if we're going to a restaurant, we're in the car, we're, you know, didn't matter where we were going, there's the selfie stick and they're recording every second. Now, what's cool about this feature is there's these moments that they really put themselves out there. And for Rachel to see, I mean, what captivated me, and kind of, I'm even writing a column to go along with this, is there's a point where she's screaming. She pulls over the side of the road and she just screams in her car. And I think we've all maybe at some point in our careers felt that frustration. And for her, it's a whole, you know, plethora of reasons of just, you know, her being the only female agent with her own agency in Major League Baseball, having the biggest free agent this offseason, the pressure. I mean, it's easy to look back now because we see what Trevor Bauer, right, hindsight, has signed. But back then in January, Buster, the pressure of the fact that he hadn't signed, that even at that point, he didn't have a lot of offers. It was really quiet. So there was this, you know, social media and just within the business pressure on her of like, yeah, you're the only female agent and you can't even get the number one free agent signed by now. What is wrong with you? So just feeling her frustration, but then seeing, you know, over the course of her life, being a Division I gymnast at UCLA, what she's learned, there's so much there. But I love being able to follow them around during a very pivotal point in this free agency and see their relationships, see how much Trevor trusts her. And the fact, Buster, from a business perspective, I think it's brilliant what she's doing for the player. She's charging almost like a pay-per-service fee. So instead of agents that get, you know, anywhere from, you know, 2% to 5% of these multi-huge million-dollar deals, knowing they work their tails off to get the deal, but then let's say it's an 8-year deal. Right. So like, or look at Fernando Tatis Jr. How much is that agent each year of 14 years doing what they deserve in multi-million dollars of their contract? So anyway, Rachel, you pay for the service that she's giving you. So it allows the player a little bit more freedom to earn the money and go and get these contracts and pay her for what she's doing versus just a percentage of the overall contract.
Real quick, when is that going to run?
It'll run this Sunday on SportsCenter. I actually don't have a time yet, but yeah, it'll be a part of the Sunday feature this coming Sunday.
We got 90 seconds left. Because you spent all that time around Trevor, I wanted to get your feel on this. I've heard from so many executives of other teams who are just fascinated because Trevor's out there on social media all the time. How his, his aggressiveness on social media will play in what is a really disciplined Dodgers clubhouse. And if I were Trevor's friend, he asked me my advice, I'd say, Trevor, look at Clayton Kershaw, you know, look at the other guys in that team. Chase Utley, you know, helped to establish a culture there. Just go and pitch and don't worry about building a brand. What's your sense of how that's going to play out?
He's going to be building a brand. I don't think that will slow
him. And he doesn't need my advice. Let me make this clear. He just signed with this massive contract. But if you were, you know, if we were friends, that's what I would tell him. But you were going to say?
Well, I was, he's going to continue to build his brand. This is why Trevor, he really only had a select amount of teams he felt like he could go to where he could continue to not only build his brand, but also the way he pitches. He has a very unique style and approach, and he's so cerebral, and the Dodgers were a perfect organization. And honestly, Buster, I'd say one of four organizations that I feel like could keep up with where he is at in supporting all the different things that he wants to do within the game, within pitching. I mean, he is someone that's incredibly innovative. Just as building, I got to see his own pitching lab in Arizona. That's going to be something that no one has ever seen when it comes to pitching labs, as far as the technology. So this kind of stuff, he needed to be a part of an organization that was going to be able to match him with so much of the brain that he is and the stuff that he wants to dive into. I will say though, the one area, and he's a very confident guy, as you know, that he said he did want to improve on is his social media. And improve not meaning do more, but actually just be more refined in what he's putting out there. He has noticed in the last 5 years that he's been misunderstood in a lot of the things. And that's where Rachel has come in and helped him a ton. She said at points where it's maddening, where she's like trying to grab his phone from it, like, stop taking this video, do not post this. And he rides that line, but he does understand that he wants people to know him. They don't have to like him, but to actually know him. And there's been some posts that he knows he's put out there where maybe he's been misunderstood because of it.
All right, Jess, great to talk with you. Have fun with the game this week.
Yeah, no, it'll be awesome. Baseball, spring training. Wish we were on site, but hey, we can only get so far. Thanks, Buster.
0-0-9-6.
This is The Numbers Game with Sarah Langs.
Sarah Langs is a reporter and a producer for MLB.com. I cut off your music, Sarah. I should have just shut up and let it play.
It's so good. You see, what is this, the third time we're using it now, and I still can't stop smiling when I hear it. I love it so much.
Wow. Well, that's pretty cool. All right, before we get to the numbers game today, we heard yesterday from Sandy Alderson, the head of baseball ops for the Mets, that he expects conversations will begin soon with Francisco Lindor and with Michael Conforto. Let's just take Lindor for a moment. Look, in the last year, we've had Mookie Betts signing the second biggest contract in baseball history behind the Mike Trout contract. And then, last week, we got the official announcement about Fernando Tatis Jr.'s contract, 14 years, $340 million. That's a player who doesn't have the service time that Lindor has, but he's also 6 years younger than Lindor. What might a fair Lindor extension look like? Given what we've seen in baseball in the last couple of years?
You know, it's so interesting because I feel like, especially the Tatis deal, I think changes the answer to this even more. Like, what I would have said if we talked about this 3 weeks ago is probably different than what we're saying now. I mean, I'll be honest that at a certain point, I wasn't 100% convinced that this was a $300 million player only because we'd seen so few. And it's so hard to figure out where this player, where Francisco Lindor really falls on that spectrum. You know, he hasn't won an MVP like Mookie Betts had. He hadn't won a World Series title, carried a team to one the way we'd seen him do so. But with seeing the value that was put in Fernando Tatis Jr. and seeing the value put, you know, on a power hitting shortstop, which is what Tatis is, very similar to Lindor, I'm now fully convinced in my predictions or whatever else it might be. And I mean, I think we're definitely talking in the maybe 10-year, 320 range. I don't think that the total money is going to be as much as that Mookie Betts deal. I just, you know, we're talking about slightly different types of players there. But I do think that the $300 million threshold has really been, you know, broached now. Because before this, it was, we had Manny Machado was just right there. We had Bryce Harper. Those were contracts we'd heard about for years and years leading up to them happening. And so they'd almost been hyped up to that 300 level. Then we had Mookie Betts, who was very deserving of that. Not that the others weren't. And we had Mike Trout. But now I think this is the next wave of guys who are going to be in that range. And I'm thinking now about like the Juan Soto deal. That's all I can think about right now is where that number is going to be. But for Francisco Lindor, I think 10 years and 320, I think that I'm probably saying a lower number than what will maybe really happen. But just looking at stats, knowing how shortstops age and everything else, that seems legit to me.
A couple of factors to think about. One, if you're David Meter, who represents Lindor, if you're Lindor, you know that there is inherent pressure on Steve Cohen to get this guy signed, the Mets' new owner, to get Lindor signed before he hits the free agent market. You know, if the Mets win the World Series, say, in 2022 or 2023, then Steve Cohen has he's going to have some something banked with Mets fans. And he could be more conservative. He could drive a harder bargain. But I think on Lindor's side in this case, they know that there's pressure on the owner. On the flip side, I don't know how, if you're a player in the current climate, if you get a deal, let's say, that starts with $280 million, potentially how you say no, right? Let's say that the offer is 9 years, $280 million. I don't know how you say no to that, Sarah, knowing as well that if Lindor says, you know what, we're not going to make a deal, he potentially could go into a free agent market and to a year if he has a, you know, a down year like he did last year for the Indians, albeit in a 60-game performance, and he hits the free agent market, he could be competing against this unbelievable class of shortstops. So I think there are compelling reasons on both sides for them to find a middle ground.
Absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, we've been hyping up that shortstop class and it's going to be really fun. However, many of those guys actually are free agents by the time the season ends, but it's not in any of their best interest for all of those guys to be free agents at once. I mean, I did that research for you a while back now about how we'd never seen this many free agents get, you know, long-term contracts, which these guys all will, from the same position in a single offseason. And that was for looking at what, five, and we've already taken, you know, one off the board, whatever it might be, but that's not going to help them in that market. So I do think that there's enough motivating, there are enough motivating factors to probably get something done. But you do have to wonder also what these deals might look like for a contract that might begin in 2022 with the upcoming CBA and everything else as well.
You're exactly right. That's great to point that out. The other potential free agents, I want to help me out with this. We've got Trevor Story, the Rockies. We've got Corey Seager, the Dodgers. We have Javier Baez, and we have Carlos Correa, and as well as Lindor. So those five guys could all be in the market at the same time. So if you're Lindor, if you're Story, you're Correa, you have a down year, all of a sudden you're going to be looked at in a completely different context against those other free agents. All right, let's play the numbers game.
Number three.
Number three is 260. So I was looking at some projections, and Gerrit Cole is projected by Zips, by Dan Zimborski, to lead the majors in strikeouts with 260. And a lot of times these projections maybe are a little bit lowballing. So if 260 sounds like a small number for a 162-game season, I wouldn't be too concerned about that. I know some Yankees fans were when I tweeted this out. But he's projected to lead the majors 260 strikeouts. So the last Yankees pitcher to lead the majors outright in strikeouts was Lefty Gomez with 194 in 1937. I triple checked that because you think of the great pitching the Yankees have had and it just completely baffled me. And the last Yankees pitcher to even lead the American League, let alone leading the majors, was Al Downing in 1964. He had 217 when Bob Veal led the National League with, and the majors with 250. So the really cool thing here is that only two teams have gone longer since their last league leader. So looking at Downing. So the Athletics, the last time that they had a league leader was 1931 with Lefty Grove. The Orioles, 1954 with Bob Turley. And then both the Yankees and Pirates had a player lead the league in 1964 and have not had one since. which is just like a crazy coincidence. And maybe the Pirates, it's a little bit more believable, a little bit less of a pitching tradition since that time. But the Yankees, I mean, I really couldn't believe that.
Number two.
Number two is 10. So this one's just a little bit funny, but I wanted to share it with the world. So Zach Greinke, in his press conference yesterday, was asked about milestones and if he had any milestones on his mind, strikeouts, games pitched, whatever else might be. He's 37. He's been around for a long time. There's a lot that could be piling up. And he said that the only thing he has on his mind is the 10 and 10 club. That would be 10 career home runs and 10 career stolen bases for himself as a pitcher. So he has 9 home runs and he has 9 stolen bases. And he mentioned how he got thrown out stealing in a game for the Astros pretty recently and how it was disappointing to go to the American League just for the reason that he wouldn't get to bat because he was chasing these numbers in his mind. So only 4 pitchers have accumulated at least 10 home runs and 10 stolen bases in the modern era. Bob Gibson, Bucky Walters, Walter Johnson, and Harry Howell, which is just so much fun to me. And this is 50% of their career games as pitcher. So I know people are always curious about Babe Ruth. He does not qualify. He doesn't count as a career pitcher in this case. But those 4 guys and Zach Greinke is literally chasing them around the base pass.
Number one.
Number one is 82. So I know we have some Indians conversation on the podcast today, so I had to get a little Shane Bieber in here. So American League Cy Young winner, Shane Bieber, had 82 strikeouts through his first 50 innings pitched in 2020, which was the most by any starting pitcher through his first 50 innings in a season in Major League history, according to Elias. And there were a million Bieber stats last year, but that's one of the ones that really stands out to me because it's not it was just a 60-game season or anything else. I mean, every pitcher who pitched at least 50 innings in a season had a first 50, so that's equally comparable, which is why I like that. And he set that record with 82 strikeouts in 50 innings to start the season. So if we're looking at Indians pitchers to lead the league in strikeouts in consecutive years, which he did last year, he would be competing with Cole and others who I mentioned earlier. Len Barker led the American League in strikeouts in 1980 and 1981. But Bieber actually led the majors last year. So the last Indians pitcher to lead the majors in at least 2 straight seasons was Sam McDowell, who led in 3 straight from 1968 to 1970. So should be some fun pitching in the American League this year.
Yeah, the Indians, unlike the Yankees, have had a bunch of guys lead the league in strikeouts. And it's interesting, you know, as storied as the Yankees' history is, if you go back and look at the guys who have their numbers retired, you've got your Whitey Ford, and Mariano Rivera is the greatest reliever of all time, but the vast majority of their all-time greats are position players. And I agree with you that it is remarkable how few league leaders they have. I mean, through the years, they've had guys like Roger Clemens, Andy Pettit, but they've never really been a big strikeout team. So, fascinating numbers. All right, Sarah, thanks for doing this.
Thanks so much for having me, Buster.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit directtv.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
Mandy Bell covers the Cleveland Indians for MLB.com. And Mandy, you don't make bets, as far as I know. I don't make bets, as far as you know. But it's been fascinating to see the over-unders on the Cleveland Indians. And I always, you know, tell people that I like looking at those because, you know, the people who built Las Vegas or some of these casinos, they're smart people and they generally know what they're doing. But the Indians over-unders have really surprised me with how low they are. 2021, I've seen numbers, you know, 81, 82, 83. And I feel like when I see those, like the folks doing it don't really see what's made the Indians great in recent years. Yes, I get it. Lindor's gone, but it's about the pitching.
It's absolutely about the pitching, and the pitching's back. I know that they lost Carlos Carrasco, but the young guys, I mean, that's just what this entire roster has thrived on is the young pitching. And I think that it's tough because you obviously have the AL Cy Young winner and Shane Bieber coming back. You have Zach Plesac, who had an outstanding year last year, and the Indians do not think that's a fluke. The amount of work that he put in the offseason, he said he doesn't even think that he took a day off. I mean, he went just as hard as he could this offseason to try to get better. And then Terry Francona was just even saying the other day, Aaron Savali's, he's just somebody that I think maybe has a ceiling higher than what most people are seeing from the outside. So I know the Indians are really high on their top three guys. You have Tristan McKenzie, who's a little bit unproven at that number four spot, and there's going to be a battle for that number five spot. But as Terry Francona always says, as long as you have pitching, you cannot be completely out of contention. And the Indians certainly have that. So I definitely think that they can lean on that one more year.
Were you surprised like I was at some of the projections? Like I thought, no, I get it if people aren't picking to win the division. But 81, 82, 83 wins seems low to me given what the strength of that staff.
Absolutely. I think that would have been a little bit more accurate if they wouldn't have reinvested at least some of those savings, trading Lindor and Carrasco back into the team. But after you pick up Eddie Rosario, they got Cesar Hernandez back. They loved Hernandez last year. He was great for them. He was their second best offensive player behind Jose Ramirez last year. So if they wouldn't have done that, then yes, I think that would have made a little bit more sense. But after those moves, I do think that those projections are a little bit low because I think those guys are going to help the team a little bit more than maybe what people are expecting.
So Shane Bieber has put together a repertoire, much like you build a house with bricks, right? It feels like every year he's adding something. What do you think his focus is going to be on this year, and how is he doing in terms of recovering from the COVID?
Well, the biggest focus for him this year is going to be his slider. In 2019, the slider was the go-to pitch. That was, as he described it, as his bread and butter. And he went away from that last year. He started to develop that curveball. The curveball became just deadly, and that was his go-to pitch. So now, because he got away from it, he didn't throw it as frequently. He spent the offseason revamping the slider. And he thought, okay, well, how do I get better from here? Well, you add the best pitch from 2019 and mix it in with the best pitch from 2020. And that'll make for a pretty great 2021. So he had his first outing yesterday, and at that point he was just trying to focus on the slider. He wasn't using all of his pitches. He wasn't using his curveball. So he did run into some trouble at times, but he really liked the shape of that slider, and he thinks as spring training goes along, it's going to just keep getting better and better. So I think that he's trying to set himself up to be even better than he was last year, if that was possible. And then as far as COVID, I mean, he's recovering really, really well. From what he explained, he didn't really have too many symptoms, if any at all. And so he was just kept back at his house. And whenever he was at his house, he was able to continue to throw in his yard and still get his workouts in. So he's been doing really, really well since he's come back.
Yeah, with Bieber, it's like looking for a pimple amid perfection last year and how good he was. But down the stretch and watching some of his games, watching him in the postseason, there's no question opposing hitters began to wait him out a little bit. And he began to have some high pitch counts within innings that probably shortened some of his starts. What does it look like at shortstop now that Lindor's gone?
Well, there's going to be a little bit of a position battle there. I mean, you have two guys that they got back from the Mets. You have two shortstops that are going to have to battle it out a little bit more. You have Ahmed Rosario, who's a little bit older, a little bit more experienced in the major leagues. And then you have Andrés Giménez, who I think the Indians really, really wanted to make sure was going to be back in that return package for those guys. They think the ceiling is just so high for this kid. And he had his first game with the Indians on Sunday. He played in their spring debut. And my goodness, did he impress. I know it's game one of spring training. It means nothing. But he got the team very excited. He had a triple, a single, a great relay throw home to get a guy at the plate.
I mean, he really, really did everything that the Indians could have asked for. His base running was excellent. And so I think that they are really, really excited about him. It's just going to come down to whether or not they want to start him in the minors. I mean, he played a little bit in 2020. If they start him in the minors, maybe they can manipulate service time a little bit more and get an extra year of control out of him. And you just have Ahmed Rosario at short for the time being. But long term, at least at some point this year, definitely going to see Jimenez back up at short.
I was talking with an evaluator with another team yesterday about the Indians. He said, you know, it's really going to come down in terms of whether or not they contend, comes down to generating runs. Who are the couple of key guys in your eyes in terms of making that happen?
Well, Jose Ramirez is going to be one of those guys every single year that he's on this roster. I mean, he's proven it. How many times can he finish in the top three of the MVP award in the last few years? You know, I think that they're just going to rely on him as long as they possibly can. So he's going to be one of them. I think a huge person that they need to see production from is Framel Reyes. They got him for a reason. They need that power in the lineup. He was on fire last spring when everything got shut down. He was looking like he was in midseason form, and he wasn't able to see any live pitching over the break, and he came back, and he just didn't have his swing. He wasn't really there. The timing wasn't there. But he got hot in August, really, really hot in August. And he said, I can be that hitter more consistently. And so if he can be that hitter more consistently, that'll be a huge pickup. And then, of course, Eddie Rosario. I mean, they need to see that pay out for them. His numbers at Progressive Field, at least with the Twins, are outstanding. And so I think as long as that can translate over to being actually in an Indians uniform, I think that this offense could be a little bit better than what maybe a lot of Indians fans are thinking right now.
2 minutes left, two questions for you. Tell me about Terry Francona and how he's doing. Of course, you know, missed so much of last year.
Well, I think the biggest surprise for any of us was to find out that he had a staph infection in his left foot over the offseason. Nobody was expecting more health updates to come whenever we got to spring training. He was on crutches. He had his foot in a boot. And it was just another 10-day stint in the hospital for him. So after everything he went through, he had more to overcome in the offseason. But I think the biggest thing is that his personality, everything is back. He is more like Tito. It has been so much fun to have him back. He's cracking jokes every single day, and it's been really enjoyable to have him back. So you can tell his spirits are in a lot much of a better place than what they were last year. And he's already been cleared to lose one of his crutches, and he's hoping by the end of March that he can be able to walk unassistedly. So that'll be nice.
Your focus on the American League Central, besides the Indians, which team do you think is most dangerous?
I know a lot of people are still projecting the Twins. I know everyone's still like really high on the Twins, but I just think the White Sox, this is just going to be their year. I think that they're really, really dangerous. I thought that last year, and I thought that they laid some great groundwork last year to be able to come into this year even in a better position. They had another great offseason. I really think that the White Sox are going to be the team to watch out for whenever you're going into the AL Central.
All right, Mandy. Great to talk with you. Thanks for doing this.
Yeah, thanks, Buster.
Bleacher Tweets. Alrighty, Buster. Bleacher Tweets for Tuesday. Back from the IL. We got a tweet here. First of all, David at BaseballFan1918 wrote to you, "Hey, Buster, I hate to say it, but less bird sounds on the pod, please. I was listening to Monday's pod this morning and just pulled into work when the Bleacher tweet started. Maybe the speakers were a little too loud, but a cardinal started pecking at my window. Love the pod." All right.
Well, I was going to say, from David's Twitter handle, you think that maybe he was maybe a Red Sox fan, 1918, that reference there. Mm. But he's probably more likely a Cubs fan, right? Which is why the Cardinals coming after him.
Friend of birds over here at the podcast. I love it.
There you go.
Sorry, David. We're probably going to continue on with the bird sounds as they come in. Next up, we got Christopher Savage at Savage and Beast. Writes in, "Hey, Buster, what do you think about the long-term ramifications of canceling the minor leagues will be in 2020? This is a crucial time in a player's development. Do you think we'll see a fall-off in play on the field for the next few years?"
I don't think there's any question that players are going to be affected because they lose that opportunity to be on the field, to have those reps, to have those plate appearances. It's why I think a lot of teams are really curious to see what they have. You know, in a lot of cases, their player drafted, they have a small handful of bats, and they sat out a year. So I do think it's going to be interesting, and I do think there are going to be players who've been hurt by the year off.
Next up, we got Andrew Campbell at Real Cam True. He writes in, "Hey, Buster, how much longer do you think it will be before every Major League Baseball team officially has a 6-man starting pitcher rotation that is standard for the regular season, over under 5 years?
Yeah, Andrew, I would agree with you. You know, maybe there'll be a modified six-man rotation. For example, if you have a, you know, a horse starter like a Trevor Bauer who clearly can handle once every 5 days, maybe you work around that guy. But we're seeing, you know, teams like the Dodgers be very progressive and giving their players, their starting pitchers, more rest. And I think that's the direction the sport's going.
Next up, we got Shane Christensen at Fig Jam Zero. He writes in, "Hey Buster, with baseball struggling to earn viewers, why isn't there more attention being paid to the RSN debacle that is currently taking place? The handling of the situation has received little attention. What is the long-term impact on baseball?"
Yeah, because Shane, I think there's just a mountain of stuff right now that needs to be resolved within baseball. We just talked about, you know, the impact of the truncated 60-game coronavirus season. The minor league baseball not being played last year, the reduction of minor leagues, pace of play, the current CBA coming up. So, yeah, I understand what you're saying about the RSN debacle, but let's face it, baseball has a long list of things that it needs to address here in the next calendar year. It'll be fascinating to see the changes that are coming in baseball over the next 12 months.
Last note for today, I got to shout out Justin Meekins at Salisbury University for his wild, not class photo, but his headshot for the year. He's an outfielder and he wore monocles. He's got a twisted up mustache. He's got like a little goatee that is also twisted. And this is in a pattern of him going a little bit wacky for picture day. And I think we did a piece on it on ESPN.com last year. So shout out to Justin Meekins at Salisbury in the Gull Gang. Big Spence, Mick, Graham. Shout out Ocean City, Maryland and Purdue Chicken. Can't forget that when you're talking about Salisbury.
I like those handlebar mustaches, right?
Yeah, it's
I mean,
good look.
It's little Raleigh fingers. I know, Taylor, that he may not jump to mind for you, but he was a Hall of Fame pitcher who had that great handlebar mustache. Yeah, I loved it. That was pretty cool.
Nice throwback. All right, everyone. That's it for Bleacher Tweets. Hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter. And subscribe, rate, and review to this podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts.
That's it for today. My thanks to Jess, Sarah, Mandy, and Taylor. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, check out the Fantasy Focus podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. The Baseball Tonight podcast.